This is Judith Leigh welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. Welcome to the final week of Advent, the last week of preparation for the great celebration of the real Christmas in the themes of hope, peace, joy and love. But that's not easy, is it, when the world seems very lacking in love, and maybe our own lives are full of challenges too. And so, if you're feeling a bit overwhelmed, you might find it helpful to use one of the four short talks that Bishop Tricia has prepared. The first three were about hope, even in times of darkness, a different kind of peace, and joy beyond all joys. The talk for this week is all about love.
So this Advent, we have already come very far. Now we come to the final and the greatest theme of Advent, love. Not the fragile love that depends on our own efforts, not the hesitant or the conditional love that is so often offered us, but God's love, the love that will not let us go.
The talks are available as individual podcasts, and each includes a Bible reading, a reflection by Bishop Tricia, and a short prayer. And there's a booklet too where you can read Bishop Tricia's words, find some thoughts for reflection, and some small practical ideas to try to plant those Advent values of hope, peace, joy, and love in our daily life. You can find the podcasts via the Manx Radio website. They're right next to the podcast of this programme, and they're called Through Advent with Bishop Tricia. And in the podcast notes, I've put a link to the website, sodorandman.im, where you can read and download the booklet and take a look at the four short videos too. Later in today's programme, we'll be finding out what happened when three work colleagues went on a once-in-a-lifetime trip together. But first, I've an invitation to a very particular kind of carol singing.
All the holly and the ivy, when they are both full grown, of all the trees that are in the wood, the holly bears the crown. Oh, the rising of the sun, the running of the deer, the playing of the merry organ, sweet singing all in the choir. Oh, the holly bears a berry as red as any blood, and Mary bore sweet Jesus to do poor sinners good. Oh, the rising of the sun, the running of the deer, the playing of the merry organ, sweet singing all in the choir. Oh, the holly bears a bark as bitter as any gall, and Mary bore sweet for to redeem us all. Oh, the rising of the sun and the running of the deer, the playing of the merry organ, sweet singing all in the choir, sweet singing all in the choir. Mm-hmm.
That's the very popular Kate Rusby singing The Holly and the Ivy in the style of a village carol. But what exactly is a village carol? Well, it's a fascinating story and you could be part of the next chapter. And who better to tell us all about this than my first guest? Because he's originally from Yorkshire, where village carol singing is a well-established and very popular tradition. So it's good morning and welcome to retired teacher and accomplished musician Andrew Cole, who's going to tell us all about village carols, or more specifically, Yorkshire carols. That's right, isn't it, Andrew?
Yes, Judith. Sheffield carols, North Derbyshire, up the Pennines a little way into West Yorkshire, but the ones I know best are Sheffield carols.
Now, what's different between Sheffield carols and the regular carols that we play on this programme and we're all singing around our churches and chapels just now?
Almost everything. They came about a long time ago in the 19th century, at a time when the established church had its more standardised hymn books, or hymnals as they were called then, and many churches had large congregations who could afford to commission the building of an organ. So most churches sacked their musicians at that time, and the carols became very standardised. And so the musicians that were left took some of the music to their local chapels around the villages and into the pub to sing at lunchtime.
So how then did it keep going?
To start with, it was word of mouth and learning the words, because all the villagers knew the words and all turned up to what they call and still call the sings. So there is a list of sings around the villages of Sheffield and North Derbyshire to this day. It's undergoing a revival now, but how it kept going was the groups of musicians would follow round a traditional route and play at different places on different days, and everybody knew when that would be, and so everybody turned up to sing with them and got better and better, singing in four parts, singing loudly, singing to each other, which you don't get in a church so much. So it's eye-to-eye contact, singing out these wonderful truths over a pint of beer in one hand and a lusty voice.
I'm looking now over your shoulder at your music book and the names of the tunes. We've got Stannington, Tinwood, we've got Spout Cottage.
Well, what we're looking at, Judith, is one of the first published editions of the written carols, which is dated 1966, Uttebridge Wesleyan Reformed Chapel. Uttebridge being a village in the valley where I used to live before moving to the Isle of Man. And many of the tunes are named after places. So Uttebridge has its own tune, Stannington has its own tune and a brass band who play these carols. Spout Cottage is a place up the hill above Wharncliffe Side. And Tyre Mill is a really interesting one, which was sung by the workers in the tyre mill, which used to be at Sammy Fox's Steelworks up the Don Valley towards Stannington, actually. And the man who did the research on this is called Ian Russell, and he published a book called The Sheffield Book of Village Carols, which is now in at least its second edition. He published very well-evidenced work about the history and collected some of the original manuscripts written by local people in the villages. And his description of the performance, he says it makes it abundantly clear that the performances were extremely robust and uninhibited. Quote, the use of dynamic expression was kept to a minimum and the carols were mostly performed fortissimo. Tempo was generally strict, slow and deliberate. What tends to happen is that visitors or people new to this amazing experience tend to end up singing whatever the person next to them is singing, which might be the tune or it might not, but it doesn't matter because it all fits.
You're going to tell us, Andrew, that you can come and do all of this here on the island. I can understand, as somebody who grew up with this, this would be important to you, but why the island?
That's a really good question, Judith. I thought people might be wondering that. It goes back to 2009 when I started working at Castle Rushen High School, and one of my colleagues was John Binns, and we got talking and found out that we were both from Yorkshire, both knew the local carols and missed them. And so we started in John's house, actually, singing some local carols with a few friends. And it just went on from there and eventually moved to the pub in the traditional way and then to another pub, which is now Tinwald Inn. So we thought, well, we're bringing Sheffield Carols on Tour, so we called it that to start with. Now we call it Village Carols on Tour because we want to encapsulate other areas. And of course, why not some local carols from here? So people like Annie Kizik and Phil Gorn have helped us out, brought some of their singers, and we'd like to use more of the now published local carol tunes and words so that we've got village carols on tour and local. We have so much expertise here, don't we? And I'm in awe of the people who are able to write new tunes, adapt old ones, do the research, know the Manx, invent the Manx in some cases. It's wonderful. People might have heard of common metre, which is the way that the words are laid out in a verse. And While Shepherds Watched is a common metre carol. I think it has something like 133 known tunes. Many people might recognise the setting to the tune which we most commonly understand as Ilclymore Bartat. There's another very well-known one, it's even better known now that it's in CD form with Kate Rusby and others, but that's Sweet Chiming Bells, which has a chorus after each While Shepherds Watched verse. So you get all six verses and six choruses.
It's interesting that you should mention Kate Rusby. So would the kind of carols that she sings, would that be the kind of carol that you're talking about?
Yes, Kate has adopted many of the local Sheffield carols. Her versions are a little bit more professionally produced, shall we say, with her wonderful band. The tunes are quite simple, easy to learn, always in four parts, very often fugal, so the women sing a line and the men follow and they overlap. And then quite often there's a repeated line at the end, which is sung even louder and more enthusiastically.
Now, all the direction signs in this conversation are pointing towards us going to be singing some carols here on the island, aren't we?
Yes, we are. If you're interested in joining us, the date is the 3rd of January at 4:30 p.m. at Tynwald Inn, which everybody knows where Tynwald Hill is. Well, it's the one straight opposite there. And the licensees, Robin and Yana, are delighted to welcome us back for our third year at Tynwald Inn. All you have to do is bring yourself and a plate of food to share. And it's a couple of hours. Great fun.
And do you provide all the music that's needed?
Yes. The music's usually sent out in PDF format to those who have expressed an interest. And we also print a few sets to give out on the day. Local musicians are welcome. So we have John Elliott on keyboard already. We have a flautist coming. We might have a cellist and a violinist already. And there'll probably be others. So we'll end up emulating as best we can what I know as the Sheffield Big Set, which was the Edwardian 13 players with their instruments who followed round the villages in their bowler hats.
You are a part of the United Reformed Church and Methodist joint ministry there in Ramsey. That's very, very important to you. So as a musician, this will be close to your heart. But as somebody who is passionate about sharing the meaning of the season, that's important too, isn't it?
Yes, I think it's true of anyone who understands and loves to sing, but also to sing truth to each other. And that's done in these sing sessions in quite a unique way. And it's a lovely thing to declare the truth of the gospel to each other across the room.
While shepherds watch their flocks by night, all seated on the ground, the angel of the Lord came down and glory shone around. Sweet bells, sweet chiming Christmas bells, sweet bells, sweet chiming Christmas bells, the cheer was on our heavenly way, sweet chiming bells. Fear not, said he, for mighty dread it sees their troubled minds. Glad tidings of great joy I bring to you and all mankind. Sweet bells, sweet chiming Christmas bells,
you, Andrew Cole. And Village Carols on tour will be at Tynwald Inn at St John's on January the 3rd, but I'll remind you again about it nearer the time. The work of the international charity Mission Aviation Fellowship is something we've talked about a number of times on this programme, not least because AFD Software, the Ramsey-based Postcode People, owned by David and Alison Doricott, have bought not one but two planes to enable Mission Aviation Fellowship to carry out their life-changing work of bringing healthcare, education and essential supplies to people living in remote jungles, deserts and mountains, isolated parts of the world where there are no roads, but small aircraft can reach. David and Alison Doricott have been committed to supporting the work of MAF for many years through their annual charity donations, and this year offered three members of AFD Software staff the chance to visit Papua New Guinea, where the latest plane purchased by the Doricotts is working. After quite a tough selection process, Afric O'Shea, Oliver Lenehan and Leo Fosdill were chosen to go first to Mount Hagen, Mission Aviation Fellowship's base in Papua New Guinea, and then to fly on to a remote village, Yomneki, typical of the isolated mountain village where the charity makes regular flights, dealing with everything from medical emergencies to delivering essential supplies, taking produce to market and transporting teachers from one village to the next. Afric, Ollie and Leo have just come back, and on Friday they shared with me some thoughts about a short trip. They had just one day in the village of Yomneki, but it had clearly had a huge impact.
The people in the village in Yomneki that we visited were extremely generous and warm and welcoming as soon as we got off the plane. And we could see that they were very interested in talking to us, and a good few of them actually spoke very good English, so we got to talk to them a lot. I think one of the stories that stood out for me from the village was one of the women. We found out that she had a spinal injury and was nearly paralysed and had to be carried for 3 days to the nearest medical centre. And she thankfully could still walk now, but she's still in pain. And I think that just really stood out to me. We take for granted how easily we can access these things back home.
Is it a very basic life?
Definitely. There's no electricity, there's no running water. The nearest source of water was a river, a 30-minute walk down the hill, and then you'd have to carry stuff back up. So every day they're going down to wash clothes, wash themselves, wash their dishes that they cook with. Facilities were very basic, but these days, now with solar power and Starlink, they could possibly make use of that in the future.
The sort of standout moment for me of the whole trip was definitely the visit up to the village and seeing the tribe. It's just so remote, and we're so lucky to have had that chance. It was a 20-minute flight from where we were based, and then you're just into nothingness and landing on this tiny little airstrip. We were there 24 hours. It was just quite overwhelming, really, meeting all these people and listening to all their stories and walking around. It was, yeah, pretty special. The next morning when we woke up, I'd already got into it that, yeah, I could quite happily stay here for another 10 days and listen to these people walk through the valley and visit some other people and their little villages. Yeah, if I had the chance again, I'd be there for a lot longer. Yeah, they grow their own coffee beans up there, which they use then as a cash crop to sell back. That goes in the plains if there is room, but sometimes there isn't room because there's other priorities like medevacs, so they can lose some of their crop. But yeah, these stories just gave us the whole roundness.
Yomneki, the village itself, was astonishingly beautiful. It's perched high on the edge of a mountain, and the clouds are all kind of below us. All around us was surrounded by mountains and this dense jungle. So it kind of really hit home quickly how isolated this community is. That helped us also see, like, firsthand the hardships every single day, like Leo's just mentioned about the water and how they have to do these daily essentials and how cut off they are. But it's not necessarily the hardship, but it's the resilience that they show every single day, and that sense of community about how they all work together for that shared goal, whether it's farming the crops or being part of that wider community. That was special. They have no kind of concept of distance. So when we talk to the children or to different villages, how far the school is away or how far their home is away, it was measured in normally hours or minutes. So it was half an hour or 3 hours or 6 hours to the nearest place. So it was a slower pace of life. You talked about that sense of connection. They seemed to be stronger connected to each other. Yeah, you could see them sitting together. They said there was different words for doing nothing. They have different words of doing nothing. Walking about or sitting about. Or so they have this description of being together or spending time in each other's company, but not necessarily doing anything. Whereas in our lives at the moment, everything's got a purpose, everything's got a deadline, everything's got a schedule, you know, we've got to be somewhere. So it's quite refreshing to see that on the outside, a more relaxed environment.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we learned while we were there is how different their culture is to ours. We have these government safety nets and everything is through the government, but in Papua New Guinea, that's not really the case. They have this thing called One Talk. If you share a language with someone, that is your community, and you are sort of obligated to help anybody who you share that language with. So that's the safety net. So if somebody is in trouble, somebody needs money, they need anything, their One Talk will help them out. They have over 800 languages, so each of those One Talks are their own little safety net community. We have pros and cons to ours, and the One Talk culture also has its pros and cons. Like, if you deviate from it, then you may suffer. There may be retribution against you by your One Talk. We live a certain way, but that doesn't necessarily mean we live the correct way.
The people did everything for us. It was very, very humbling.
Leo, have you come back with a different feeling about the work of Mission Aviation Fellowship?
Yeah, I think so. Not just the work they do, but the actual logistics of the whole of MAF out there, because they each have their little departments running from things that look after their vehicles there to operations, who will look after which flights go out, what goes on the flights, then engineering. And it's just a massive team that all pull together and make sure everything runs smoothly. Because, of course, these things aren't set in stone. They might have flights booked and things to send out supplies to a village, but then a medevac might come in and completely disrupt that, and then it pushes everything on, or the weather might close in. I just found that talking to them all, they were so sort of happy in their work because they knew what they were achieving. And again, this was another community. It was the community of MAF. Yeah, they ended up being, I think, even in a few days, really good friends of ours now.
We talked a little bit, saying about how surprised the emotional impact of what we've seen, and spending the time with MAF, the guys, and seeing the sacrifices that they've made, and on a daily basis, the struggles that they have to go through. Some of them are very emotional. The five of us experiencing that together, it has brought us closer together. It is, you know, we've shared experiences that are going to last, you know, a lifetime. So it's difficult not to feel that connection. So it's good. It's very positive.
Because you mentioned the five of you, because, of course, Alison and David Doricott were with you.
Yeah.
They hadn't been out to a village. So it must have been a powerful experience for them. It was just as much of an insight for them as it was for you. And
as a business, I've given donations to MAF for so many years, and we get regular updates and bulletins from the MAF team, which gets shared across the business to show the work that they're doing. But that only gives you kind of a glimpse of it. I mean, we've been very privileged to actually see firsthand the struggles that they're doing, the sacrifices that they're making, the courage that the pilots and people in the booking system who have to make decisions of where to send the planes and where not to send the planes, to actually see that real impact. I think all five of us, speaking on behalf of David and Alison as well, to see that and to be in that environment is going to impact us.
Where you've been, what you've done, will it make you feel different about Christmas in any way, your celebration of Christmas?
One of the interesting things about the people in Papua New Guinea is that they actually record their age via how many Christmases they've experienced. So they're like 18 or 20, 40 Christmases old. I guess they have no idea what day they were born on. They don't know what month they were born in, so they just celebrate their Christmases. But yeah, certainly for me, I think being there and seeing the hardships and the poverty and what they go through certainly will make me appreciate this year's Christmas probably more than any other.
I think journeys like this always have an impact on how you live and think, and maybe take a step back and be grateful for what you've got. I mean, I've sat down with my kids and told them, and it's easy for them to whinge about things. And I can say, well, you know, the children out there don't have this and don't have that. So, and they're learning from that as well. So hopefully I can pass on a few things to them, and in my own life as well. You know, sometimes it's just easier to keep things simple. You don't need everything, you know. And I'm hoping that I can pass on things. And I'd also like to maybe do something next year towards the community to bring that community feeling back to life here as well. So I don't know what yet, but work something out.
I hope that I bring lots of different aspects from the trip back, especially to my two young boys. We had a game of football with the local children, and it's an old scrubby little ball in a muddy field that they were playing at, but they were all really happy. I'd be naive to say that we're not going to give our children these things moving forward, but to try and keep things into perspective and trying to remember that you don't need all these materialistic things, you don't need screens, try and connect more, go out and play more, go and do all these kind of basic things to try and resonate that through with the family life. It's going to stay with us forever, I think.
Thank you, Afric O'Shea, Oliver Lenehan and Leo Fosdill, reflecting there on their visit to Papua New Guinea to experience at first hand the work of Mission Aviation Fellowship, an international charity supported by their employers, David and Alison Doricott, directors of the Ramsey-based company, The Postcode People. And now it's time to take a look at another packed notice board, and I'm concentrating now on events that I know about happening today, Sunday the 21st. Bagarrow Chapel on the main road just outside Kirkmichael invite you to their carol service this afternoon at 2:30. The soloist is Maddie Wood, and there'll be seasonal refreshments afterwards. There's a carol service in St. Sanctains in Santon this afternoon at 4:00. And also at 4:00 this afternoon, Castletown Methodist Church are hosting a community candlelight carol service supported by Castletown Metropolitan Silver Band and special guests Christine Teer and Manx bard Michael Manning. Starting at 5:30 this evening, there'll be an hour of community carols by candlelight in the schoolrooms in Dorby, gathering round the wood burner with hot punch or hot black currant, mince pies and chocolates, and a menu of carols for you to choose from. Everyone's welcome at this very informal time of sharing friendship and favourite carols. Tonight, there's carols and Bible readings by candlelight in St. Thomas's Church, just off the promenade by the Gaiety Theatre here in Douglas, tonight at 6:30. Also tonight, Bride Methodist Chapel invite you to join them for a special Christmas service of readings, drama and music with Dilys Sowry and friends. Starting this evening at 6:30, the service will be followed by refreshments. 6:30 tonight is also the date and time for the carol service at the Abbey Church in Ballasalla, and of course there'll be refreshments afterwards. And also at 6:30 tonight, Manx Voices will be in St Luke's Church in Baldwin, singing carols and Christmas songs. Union Mills Chapel have carols by candlelight tonight at 6:30. And if you'd like to take part in a community nativity, then head west tonight, because at 6:30, all are welcome at Peel Methodist Chapel. That's opposite the Centenary Centre in the heart of Peel. Come dressed up and take part in the Govag Nativity, where children can bring a cuddly animal and carols will be led by Govag Groove. And there'll be refreshments too. It's all free, but any donations you'd like to make will be split between the Big Table Community Lunch and Renew Wellbeing. Kirk Christ, Russian Parish Church, have their parish carol service tonight at 6:30. And there are Christmas celebrations at the Howe tonight, also at 6:30. It's a nativity service led by the Sunday School and Friends, with music from the Howe Brass Band. And Port Erin Gospel Church invites you to their carol service tonight at 7:00. Paul and Angie Alford are the special guests who will preach and sing. And there'll be a Christmas buffet for everyone after the service. And last but not least, St Jude's Church on St Jude's Road invite you to join them for their Christmas carol service, which is tomorrow, Monday the 22nd at 6:00, with refreshments afterwards. Now, as you can imagine, I've got lots of news of crib services, Christmas communions and special celebrations on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. But so the information doesn't get completely overpowering, those Christmas Eve and Christmas Day services will be on the two sundown notice boards tonight. But because we're on our Christmas schedule of programmes here on Manx Radio, sundown will be starting an hour later than usual tonight at 10:00, because tonight between 9 and 10, Chanel Suku will be here to present A South African Christmas. So the door to our virtual lounge will be opening tonight at 10, and I do hope you can join me then for our usual mix of easy listening music with some seasonal favourites, virtual snacks, and lots of very real dedications. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love the deep joy and peace of this Advent season, and a very good morning.
The Nation Station, Manx Radio.